to come out and just have a great time. It's a great family event. You know, we're just really thankful and grateful to RVCC and Dr. Kaufman and Mr. John Trojan and the president, Michael McDonough. They've been absolutely supportive, and it's rare that we get that kind of support, and we're just really grateful that we have this opportunity to bring it to the community. And so please check out the website. Again, it's www.raritanval.edu/paintedfaces. And Dr. Kaufman, could you give them that phone number again?
Yeah, 908-231-8816, and just leave a message for Stephen Kaufman, and I'll get back to you.
I just want to thank you guys so much. I do want to thank you, Dr. Kaufman at Raritan Valley, and everyone over there. This is a very, very special thing. It is overwhelmingly supported. I can feel it. You guys are wonderful. I just respect your work so much. So glad I was actually here today representing Big C by accident because he's out at Good Morning Hunterdon. I just wanted to ask you, Emily Raven, Standing Bear, you said that you have your radio show.
Yes.
Can you really quickly let everybody know how they can listen in? Because I think want to continue to learn more.
Oh, absolutely. The name of the show is Voices of Our People. It's on Two Worlds Indigenous Radio, 99.5. Actually, the best way to listen to it is online, and it's every other Sunday evening from 10 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern Time. And we talk about a variety of issues that affect contemporary Native people today, mascot issue, missing and murdered Indigenous women, the environmental issues. So there's tons of issues that we discuss in regards to Native people, and I'd love it if you guys could tune in. Alvon Griffin is my co-host, and we play a variety of Native music, both powwow music and contemporary Native music as well, which I think everybody will enjoy.
I'm sure they will. Again, you should put it on your calendar. Next Saturday, if you want to come with your family to Raritan Valley Community College for the powwow, the authentic real-time powwow. And thanks so much for listening in today again on Good Morning Hunterdon. Big C will be back tomorrow, and I hope you have a great day. Thank you guys again for being here.
Thank you. We appreciate
Chris.
It. Feel better, Chris.
Feel better.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
USA Radio News with John DeMaster.
The FBI, Homeland Security, and other agencies investigate the shooting death of a trooper in Virginia. Trooper Chad Durmeyer shot yesterday afternoon by a man at a station in Richmond. The gunman killed in a shootout with other troopers. Democratic presidential candidate Bernie Sanders says his reaction to Trump's remarks about abortion were taken out of context by Hillary Clinton.
Well, I believe it's a serious issue. I've been spending my entire political life fighting for the right of the women to control her own body. I have 100% voting record, pro-choice voting record.
He tells Good Morning America he'd continue fighting for a woman's right to choose if he's elected president. A Mississippi law banning adoption by same-sex couples overturned. A federal judge striking it down after four legally married same-sex couples. Trump's remarks about abortion were taken out of context by Hillary Clinton.
Well, I believe it's a serious issue. I've been spending my entire political life fighting for the right of the women to control her own body. I have 100% voting record, pro-choice voting record.
He tells Good Morning America he'd continue fighting for a woman's right to choose if he's elected president. A Mississippi law banning adoption by same-sex couples overturned. A federal judge striking it down after four legally married same-sex couples file a lawsuit. The couples arguing that the ban discriminated against people who were legally married. This is USA Radio News, powered by USARadio.com.
Hey, it's Rusty Humphreys, host of Trending Today USA, where we feature...
And you were hired for a reason, you know, if you have something to say, speak up. It's great advice. So we'll be right back. Just a second or two. It's already 3:48. Thanks for listening in today.
You're listening to HuntertonChamberRadio.com, sponsored by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce.
Our studios are located in the CenturyLink building at 14 Mine Street, Flemington, New Jersey. The content and views of our hosts do not necessarily reflect the views of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. To contact our station, call 908-782-7115 or email onair@hunterdon-chamber.org. Thank you to our sponsors and underwriters. Please remember to support them and buy Hunterdon, buy local. Visit www.hunterdonchamberradio.com for a complete listing of our programming.
Canada is a legitimate issue because he's running for president. You're listening to USA Radio News.
Ah, the beginning of a new year started off right during Rite Aid's 2016 Starting Points. Because every week through January 23rd, you can ring in the values with 1,000 Plenty Points worth $10 in savings when you spend $30 on participating products with your Wellness Plus with Plenty card. That adds up to big savings every week for the entire month, but only at Rite Aid. With us, it's personal. Worth at least $10. Limit 2 offers per card per week. Plenty is a rewards program. Terms and conditions apply. See plenty.com/terms for details.
The following was recorded at a Burger King drive-thru at breakfast.
Morning, welcome to Burger King.
Let me get a sausage, egg, and cheese for sandwich.
Sure, right now they're 2 for $4, but is that how you say that?
Yeah, for sandwich.
Where I'm from, we say, cross sandwich! Try that.
Cross sandwich!
Oh, that took you 2 seconds. It took me years of practice.
I'm not you.
Piled high with thick-cut bacon or savory sausage, fluffy eggs, and melted cheese. Get 2 croissant breakfast sandwiches for just $4. Only at Burger King. Limited time only. Price and participation vary.
Republican presidential candidate Ted Cruz is sounding off on the arrest of 2 refugees from the Middle East on terror charges. Here's USA's Joe Gomez.
Republican presidential candidate Ted Cruz says the arrests of 2 Middle Eastern refugees on separate terrorism-related charges in Sacramento and Houston should be a wake-up call.
These arrests, and these are federal arrests by the Obama Justice Department, underscore the profound danger that is facing this country from radical Islamic terrorism. ISIS has declared war on America.
Speaking in Iowa yesterday, Cruz says there needs to be a practice in place to further evaluate refugees already living in the United States. I'm Chuck Gomez.
As promised, South Korea is once again blasting propaganda broadcasts across the border into North Korea. The move was announced after the North claimed to have successfully tested a hydrogen bomb this week. The broadcast consists of everything from newscasts rattling off the cost of North Korean dictator Kim Jong-un's clothes and his wife's purses to K-pop, that South Korean's version of catchy, light pop tunes. You're listening to USA Radio News.
And now, a touching moment. Well, staying in touch with GEICO.
It was a warm summer day. I was just sitting on a porch watching a babbling brook roll by. Then, out of the blue, I got an update from my GEICO app saying my claim had been processed. I felt so connected to nature, to GEICO. I stayed there the whole afternoon until that guy told me to stop trespassing on his porch. Sheesh, what was his problem?
Claim status updates, just a few taps away on the GEICO app.
A Republican bill gutting the Affordable Care Act is headed to the White House after passage by the House. Here's Terry Moore.
The measure faces a certain veto from President Obama, Republican House Speaker Paul Ryan.
Obamacare doesn't work. Higher premiums and fewer choices and restricted access, these are not signs of success.
The bill also strips federal funding from Planned Parenthood for 1 year. Massachusetts Democrat Jim McGovern.
Millions of more people have health insurance as a result. That's a good thing, but they want to take it away.
It is unlikely that congressional Republican leaders can muster enough votes to override a veto. The health care reform law has survived 2 serious challenges before the U.S. Supreme Court. I'm Terry Moore in Washington.
Are you already having some trouble keeping New Year's resolutions? Psychology professor Tim Bono says people who take just a few minutes a week to accentuate the positives in their lives tend to do better with their resolutions.
It's also one of the easiest behaviors for us to incorporate into our daily lives. And it really doesn't even involve changing anything about our lives. Rather, it's taking just a few minutes to shift the focus of our attention to those things that are going well for us.
And Bono says exercising strong willpower tends to become easier as you go.
If you can exercise strong willpower in those small behaviors.
At Crown Trophy of Flemington, we have thousands of products for you to choose from. Whether you're looking for trophies, plaques, or corporate awards, Crown Trophy of Flemington is your one-stop shop. We feature acrylic and crystal awards and promotional products for any occasion. We build and engrave all awards right on site. And we're a leading supplier of varsity jackets for local sports teams. We provide quality customer service and great pricing. Crown Trophy of Flemington is conveniently located in the Staples Shopping Center in Flemington. Crown Trophy of Flemington, we're trophies and a whole lot more.
Don't fear technology. Use it, understand it, and embrace it. The mission of Tech Today is to demystify technology. I'm your host, Chris Bianco, principal of Blue Panther Business Partners. Every Tuesday morning from 10 to 11, we will cover new apps, buying advice, technology news, and answer your questions. Good day, and join me on Tech Today on HuntertonChamberRadio.com.
Good afternoon. This is Kim Pramatic here, and I am guest hosting for Jeannie Murphy at Talented People. And we have a special guest today, and we're just getting situated here in the studio, and we will be right back to get started. We have a great show today. We're going to be talking about, with all the events in the world today, all the craziness going on, we're going to be talking about staying sane and navigating the world's challenges with our families, with forensic psychiatrist, author, and legal expert, Dr. Vivian. So we'll be right back after these commercial messages. Thanks for tuning in.
This is Tony Clark, paraplanner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Hello, hello. It's Kim Pramatic here as a guest host for Jeannie Murphy on Talented People. My show is actually Raising Conscious Kids. I was in the studio early today from 11 to 12. And, of course, all our archives are also on the Hunterdon Chamber website. So you can get all the shows there. And we're going to get started today with our guest. Our guest is Dr. Vivian Chern-Schneidman, MD. She's an expert in the application of psychiatry to legal matters. She is known for her appearances as an expert on TV and has provided expert testimony in over 50 published court cases. She is a medical doctor board certified in psychiatry and forensic psychiatry. In addition to her forensic work, she maintains a boutique clinical practice. Her publications include Forensic Psychiatry, A Lawyer's Guide, and that's just out in 2016, and two prior works of fiction, Loosening of Associations and Homicidal Intent by Random House, as well as several contributions to periodicals. Dr. Schneidman is a graduate of the Sackler School of Medicine and Bryn Mawr College. Love Bryn Mawr. So welcome to Talented People, Dr. Vivian. Oh, it'll be helpful if I turn your mic on. Okay. Welcome, Dr. Vivian.
Thank you so much.
Awesome. Well, I'm super excited to have you here today. I have you for 2 hours. So for the first hour, you know, my work is based a lot about kids and families. And so we talked about what would best serve the audience and everything. So for the first hour, we talked about talking about applications of your expertise in terms of family and those kind of things. So I think we've carved out some pretty good questions and for a pretty good dialogue so that people can be informed and educated and empowered, because these are crazy times that we're in now. And so any help that we can get in navigating, you know, even managing our own energy and how to talk to our kids at different ages about what's going on in the world, because, you know, we have access to everything now. Kids have access to everything on their smartphone, so there's no real, shielding them from it anymore. So I'm super excited. Thank you for making the trip into the studio today, and just really grateful that you're here.
Well, thanks for having me. What would you like to hear about?
Yeah, so first of all, I didn't know, and probably a lot of our listeners don't know, what does a forensic psychiatrist do?
A forensic psychiatrist provides psychiatric expertise for anything involving legal matters. So they can be really big legal matters, like when somebody tries to assassinate the president, or they can be small legal matters, like when a family needs special services for their child and the school is not working the way that the parents want the school to work, and everything in between. So I've worked in all kinds of cases, from the small ones where there's maybe an attorney involved, or there might not even be an attorney involved, but there's some issue with a school, all the way up to big cases involving not guilty by reason of insanity pleas.
Wow. Wow. And what kind of background is that? I see you went to two schools, so that's an amazing school. So what kind of background is that, just out of curiosity?
So first I became a doctor. I became an MD. Mm-hmm. And then I trained in general psychiatry. Then I trained in forensic psychiatry. And then there's a lot of on-the-job training, and mm-hmm. people specialize in different things. So I initially did a lot of work in the public sector with sex offenders, which is one of those things that I fell into. And eventually I climbed out of there. And I now currently do a lot of work with the Division of Child Protection and Permanency. I work with a lot of families. I do a lot of evaluations of both children and adults mm-hmm. that find themselves in family situations that are less than ideal. And mm-hmm. I try to advise the courts on what types of remedies need to be made in order to make these family situations better so that the families can be reunified.
Wow, what amazing work and what important work. So thank you for your work in the world and your light in the world, because it's so important.
Thank you.
So important. Yeah, I know. So what was fascinating to me as you were talking about your background and what you do, and I think one of the things that would be super helpful for parents and teachers and, you know, caregivers is, how would you suggest that we have conversations? You know, there's terrorism and so many acts going on in the world today. And what would be some guidelines that would be helpful to us? What do you think would be some good suggestions in terms of how do we tell kids about this without increasing the fear, without adding to the terror?
I think the most important thing is to listen to our kids.
Okay.
That's really the most important thing, because we experience the world very differently than our children mm-hmm. do. And we need to be very conscious of what are they actually reacting to. Mm. I've had a number of conversations with different people just over the past week that really highlighted this particular thing. One thing that people have brought out to me recently is that there really does seem to be a before and after in our society, before September 11th and after, which mm-hmm. is something that I think we've forgotten. Mm-hmm. So kids that were very small around that time, they've only known the world the way that it is now. Mm. Whereas we as adults, we really had a before and after. Mm. And you'll probably notice that if you just talk to your friends, eventually September 11th will come up. Mm-hmm. If you talk to older people, they actually talk, I didn't really know this, but they talk about the Kennedy assassination was the first time that this type of thing happened, where there was a before and after.
Wow.
And I was surprised. I didn't know there was a previous before and after, but mm-hmm. this came up recently in a conversation that I was in, and I was really interested. And probably if you talk to, you know, very old people, if you go to a nursing home and talk to people that are in their 90s, they might have another before mm-hmm. and after, like a signal event, we kind of call it in psychiatry, like an event that people recognize as demarcating a before and after in their lifetimes.
Wow.
So when you talk to kids, like my kids are 23, 19, and 15, they mm-hmm. don't, my oldest son remembers September 11th, but in a childlike way. So they remember their whole lives being like this. They remember the security in the airports always being like this. So you have to really listen. What are their concerns when they hear about terrorism? Mm-hmm. They tend to be concerned on an individual basis. Is something going to happen to me today? Is something going to happen to me if I go to this place?
Oh, okay.
You know, they're not, they don't have the global concerns that we have because they're kids. They see things from their own perspective all the time.
Yes. Wow.
And I think we have to be really cognizant of that. Don't, let's not make them more scared than they need to be.
Yes, yes. I love that perspective because, you know, listening first, because we are, if we don't listen first, we're projecting our feelings. And mm-hmm. so, like you said, and you said it in a beautiful way, is find out what they're feeling. You know, they might not, like I find that my daughter, who is now 19 and my son is 14, you know, her take on things is so mature, you know, for a 19-year-old. And to know where she's at before I can, you know, counsel her or chat with her or, you know, I think it's so important. And every child is probably different, right?
Of course. Well, that's something that's really important to remember, too, that whatever we're talking to our kids about, and I'm sure you know this, we have to really listen to them. You know, one thing I see in my private practice all the time, it doesn't matter what the topic is. It could be terrorism or it could be what classes they want to take next semester. We have to listen to them and let their goals and desires lead us.
Mm.
You know, it doesn't mean that every kid gets to major in basket weaving, which is not even a thing. Like, we just say that and we make it up. There's no really such major. But we have to respect their wishes and their desires and their choices in life, because if we try to force them to do something that they don't want to do, they're not going to be happy, and that's going to erode our relationships with them.
Mm-hmm.
And we also have to not let our fears for their futures or our fears about our futures or our own unmet wishes and our own unmet dreams shape what we want our kids to do.
Mm.
Right? So that's very important.
Yes.
And I see that in my private practice all the time. Kids who come in because their parents are somehow dissatisfied with their children.
Wow.
Because their children are great.
Wow.
But the children are not living the lives that the parents would be living now if they were living their lives over again.
So it's you see that a lot on the ball fields, living vicariously through the children, right?
Right.
Yeah, I've seen that a lot. And then it's just something as parents to be mindful of if we're falling into that. Oops, that, you know, I already did fourth grade, or I already did whatever I did. Now this is your time to be, you know, a fourth grader, or, you know, on the basketball team or whatever.
Right. Well, I mean, I've said that. Fortunately, I learned with experience, but I have said to some of my children's teachers over the years, you know, I already went to kindergarten and I don't need to help my child with this homework. He needs to figure it out for himself, you know, because there's a lot of stress and a lot of pressure on the kids today.
Oh, so much. That's how this whole platform was founded. You know, we are called upon as parents and educators and, you know, support. Now I'm broadening it now because it was parents, educators, policymakers, but, you know, your whole area of support as well. You know, we're called upon to just amp up our tools on how to deal, because life is so different. The world is so different. And, you know, we have so many classes in school, but parenting is not one of them.
No. Well, they have this thing now where they'll, like, make the kids carry around a sack of flour or something to show them how hard it is to have a baby. And then they have, like, one of those Tamagotchi things, and it'll ring, and they have to feed it, or they have to change its diaper. And that's
odd.
That's not – yeah, because
odd,
that
it?
Sack of flour or that Tamagotchi doesn't – it doesn't have a soul.
Exactly.
I mean, you don't have any emotional attachment to it. So
they're trying, right? Yeah. They're trying,
I guess.
I don't know. I guess we just have to keep trying. And, you know, the great thing about the internet is there is, you know, information, and we do have resources. I remember when I was pregnant, I went to this bookstore at the time, and, you know, it was What to Expect When You're Expecting.
Of course. Yeah.
And not too many others, really.
Yeah. Well, that, I think, was the Bible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not too many others. My massage therapist recommended one, like, moving, exercising during pregnancy. But that was like, you know, you had to order online because that was like the leading edge, you know, like 19, 20 years ago.
Yeah.
So now there are a lot of resources, and it's great because we need them. We need them. So what would you say, like, I remember you brought up the, I love that, the signal event. So I remember when 9/11 happened, and And my son was a baby, and my daughter was in at Montessori school. And I love Montessori school. I love that whole Maria Montessori's philosophy of follow the child.
Yeah.
And, you know, it really, I really appreciated that. We have one locally. And I remember I chose not to mention it to my daughter. But I know some parents chose to, like, really make it real and tangible. And then they're going to the site and just, like, so, you know, there are all kinds of spectrum. There's a broad spectrum with which we can, you know, talk to our children in. But what are some guidelines in terms of age appropriate or ages? Or I feel like that would be helpful.
I think you really have to follow your child's lead.
Okay.
You know, my oldest son was 9 on September 11th. And he saw it on TV. I mean, they kept playing it over and over mm-hmm. and over. And he was very upset that he saw these buildings fall down. And then I said, perhaps foolishly, but I said, you know, there were people in those buildings. And he, because there were people, I mean, there were a lot of kids from, that there was somebody from our development who was killed.
Wow.
He was going to hear about it. There were people from his school who lost parents.
Yes.
So, you know, he was definitely going to know that people died from that.
Mm-hmm.
And he cried. He was shocked. But he was able to understand that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he realized it was real. It wasn't a video game. It wasn't
right.
a cartoon. It was something real that had happened.
Right.
My other two kids were very small. And they knew mm-hmm. something had happened. One of them was a baby.
Yeah.
The other one was in preschool. And he knew that something had happened. And all the kids got picked up. And,
yes.
you know, he didn't get picked up. Like, that was one of my... you know, one of my terrible failures as a mother, that I was at work and he had to stay at extended day, you know, but you know what? He's okay now. Like,
exactly.
he totally got over it.
Yeah.
So,
oh, now I'm remembering that day, and I'm remembering my daughter at preschool, and I'm remembering, they actually, you know, talk about, you know, how you're going to proceed to go about your day. I actually took her to gymnastics class that night.
Mm-hmm.
And it was closed and nobody was there. And I thought, well, isn't that interesting? Like, they just assumed that nobody would be there. But she was 4 at the time. You know what I mean? Like, so I thought, well, a 4-year-old is just going to go on with her day and probably release some of the stress that she may have picked up, you know, by tumbling and jumping and doing everything she was doing as a 4-year-old. So it's interesting, right?
Yeah. Well, for me, this is a very self-centered view of this, but for me, the big before and after was that my first book, my first novel, was published exactly a week before that.
Really?
Yeah. So,
wow.
That was really my after, because I had a plan and it didn't work out the way that I wanted it to work out.
Wow.
But, you know, things, I guess, I don't know that things happen for a reason, but things happen.
Things happen. Yes. I agree with that. Things happen, and now what?
Yeah. I was recently speaking to somebody who told me about somebody that he knows who had worked for some big company like Microsoft or something, and then left before it became really profitable and a $1 billion business.
Mm.
And he told me that if you meet this guy, like if you're riding in the elevator with him for 5 seconds, he's going to tell you that this is what defined his life. And I thought that was very interesting, because some people see themselves always as the victims of this tragic thing that defined their life. Like, mm-hmm. he could have been this millionaire from Microsoft, and it wasn't Microsoft, it was another company, but mm-hmm. I just, you know, I don't want to give it away in case he's listening,
because mm-hmm.
I don't even know him. I just heard it from a mutual friend,
mm-hmm.
but, that this is how he defines his life, as he's a victim of this thing that happened to him.
Mm.
And we all have a choice. Do we want to define ourselves as a victim of this thing that happened to us that was beyond our control? Or do we want to say, well, you know, it happened, and just move on from there?
Hmm. Well, that is an interesting topic, and we're going to talk more about that. We need to take a break now, acknowledge our sponsors, our wonderful sponsors that make this programming possible at Hunterdon Chamber Radio. So we're going to be right back with Dr. Vivian Schneiderman, and this is Kim Pramatic. I said it wrong, didn't I?
It's okay.
Because I'm not reading it. I heard the little giggle. Okay, I thought I was doing so well there.
You were. You're doing fantastic, actually.
Tell me it.
Schneidman.
Schneidman. I put an extra syllable in there. Dr. Vivian Schneidman, and this is Kim Pramatic filling in for Jeannie Murphy with Talented People, and we will be right back after just a quick commercial break. Stay tuned.
Hi, I'm Joe Peters of Weikert Realtors. Buying or selling a property can be one of the most expensive undertakings you face in your lifetime, and selecting the right realtor to help you through this process can dramatically affect your success or your failure. I have personally helped hundreds of buyers and sellers through this process in achieving their dreams and goals in 100 in Somerset County areas over the past 10 years. I believe that this experience should be a smooth, seamless one for you and not a roller coaster ride. But the best judgment as to whether or not I deliver this to my customers is their reactions in their own words.
One of the things we liked about Joe was that he would return calls within minutes if he wasn't able to pick up.
You know, Joe guided us through the process of selling our home and made a complicated transaction appear seamless.
How do I accomplish this? By approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, I try to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them my own. Then, I go out and take the mass amounts of data that we have and distill them down to a few understandable action points to be considered. Finally, I control the entire process through technologies to ensure that we're not going to hit any speed bumps along the way. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let me show you how to take my level of professional expertise and put it to work for you in achieving your real estate goals and dreams. I can be reached at 908-238-0118. Thanks for your time.
Hey, this is Big C of Good Morning Hunterdon on HuntingChamberRadio.com. Like what you hear on Hunterdon Chamber Radio? Now you can take it with you. Download our Hunterdon Chamber Radio app from iTunes and Google Play Store now. Get schedules, station information, listen live, or to the latest podcasts. Everything in the palm of your hand or in your car during your commute. Get the HuntingChamberRadio.com app today.
Hi, this is Kim Pramatic, and we're back. I'm filling in for Jeannie Murphy with Talented People. And we are back with Dr. Vivian Schneidman, and she's a forensic psychiatrist, an author, and a speaker, an expert witness. And we're talking about how to really navigate these challenging times with everything going on in the world and how to support ourselves and our kids, our families, our schools, our communities. And so I wanted to get back, and we were talking about how to talk to our kids, how to meet them where they're at. And now I'd like to get into a little bit about your practice and your work. When you talk about, you know, the work you do with protective children, you know, I don't know the name of it, protective services,
child protective services. Yeah, it's the Division of Child Protection and Permanency, which used to be the Division of Youth and Family Services, but they changed their name a couple years ago to try to change their image. Yeah. That's more my forensic practice, but we can certainly talk about it.
Mm-hmm. And we were talking about, like, how to empower our kids so that they're not feeling fearful and those kind of things. And you brought up something that kind of like lit up for me, which is talking about somebody getting stuck in the victim role. And so how can we help ourselves, our kids, whether that's getting, treatment or that, with someone like you or a counselor, or what does that look like in terms of when does somebody need help? I'm just throwing a couple ideas out to see which direction you want to go, and I'll just jump in with you.
Well, I can go in any of these directions because I have a lot of opinions about a lot of things.
Good. That makes good for good radio.
But in terms of treatment, you know, what we've seen really in the past 20 years, which is basically when I've been practicing, is a shift away from psychiatrists doing all of the treatment. So I was trained to be a psychotherapist as well as to do really good psychopharmacology, which is treatment with medications. Today, the trend is to do psychotherapy with certain sort of pre
designed therapies that are very symptom focused. So if you have anxiety, there's a therapy for that specific symptom of anxiety. If you have a phobia, there's a treatment for that specific phobia. The goal is very short symptom focused therapy, mm-hmm. which can be good for certain people with certain problems. It's not good for everybody. And that can be a problem. But we as psychiatrists, unfortunately, don't get the opportunity to do long-term psychodynamically oriented psychotherapy, which is what I was trained to do and which traditionally is the kind of psychotherapy that really affects change in the underlying ways that people think long-term. Part of that is because, you know, insurance companies are for-profit entities that want to use their money to create more money. They don't want to pay it out to the treatment providers. But I don't want to really talk about that. I'm going to mention it because people need to know why it is that this has happened. Mm-hmm. So there's a small movement. You know, a lot of psychiatrists now just give out medications. People come in, they say, I'm depressed, I'm sad, I'm anxious. They get a prescription. Then the patients come back. The doctors say, how's the medication? They don't say, how are you? They say, how's the medication? Hmm. Patient says, it's good or it's not good. The doctor gives them another prescription. Come back in a month. To me, that's not how you practice psychiatry. But people are doing it. They're making money from it. The patients are generally staying alive. So, you know, it works for some people. Mm-hmm. There is another alternative, which is what I practice. And there's a group. I belong to this group. It's a web-based group, the Psychotherapy Caucus. It's a group from the American Psychiatric Association. And it's called Psychotherapeutic Psychopharmacology, which I thought I invented until I found this group. And I found that there are other doctors who practice this as well, that in your small, limited time, you do psychotherapeutic interventions with your patients. And you try to identify the issues that they need to work on and try to clarify what's going on in their life so at least they know. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you can send them to existing groups. You know, if you go on Meetup, for example, you can find psychotherapy groups.
Wow.
You can find anything. I had somebody tell me, this is really funny. Somebody came for a forensic evaluation for a totally unrelated reason. He goes, I thought I had Asperger's, so I went to a Meetup for people with Asperger's. And I said, there's no such thing, you know, because people with Asperger's are not social.
Oh, so then, oh, that's hysterical.
So then I went home and I checked it. And I found one in California, but I did find one.
That's funny.
You know, so there are ways that you can find things. There are support groups. There are other things available if you can't actually find a therapist who can provide ongoing treatment and support.
And that's a great idea because of, you know, if your insurance doesn't cover it necessarily, you know, there are other, that's a great thing about the web, right? There,
yeah.
You can find a lot of different
right.
resources.
There are, you know, people, we refer people for substance abuse treatment to the anonymous groups, right? Alcoholics Anonymous, Narcotics Anonymous. Well, there are people that have social phobias or who have, you know, who have different religions who are not comfortable going to anonymous groups. Well, now they have online anonymous groups that you can go to. Mm-hmm. So if you're not really that comfortable going to one at the local church, you can find an online one for people of your religion.
Mm.
There's a Central Jersey group of Alcoholics Anonymous for people from India.
Wow.
A colleague of mine started that.
Wow, that's great.
You know, so now there's a lot of different options for all kinds of people. And mm-hmm. the internet has made finding those things a lot easier.
Yeah, that's great.
There is treatment out there. You have to really persist. You know, don't just go to page one of Google and give up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because if you look, you get 475,000 hits in 0.012 seconds.
Right.
You got to be a little bit creative when you look.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, that's not my good radio voice. So medication can be very useful. It is not a panacea. I think that it's very important for people to understand that psychiatric medication is still in its infancy. Even though we have learned a lot about the brain, it's still the final frontier. Mm-hmm. Well, so is space. But, mm-hmm. you know, whatever we learn about space is going to be really interesting. But whatever we learn about the brain is going to be really useful.
Mm.
And anybody who tells you you have to crank up your serotonin or crank up your dopamine, I'd be very, very hesitant to follow such a treatment plan because none of this stuff has been scientifically proven.
Mm-hmm.
We know that certain neurotransmitters are associated with certain conditions, and that's about what we know. So, caution, restraint, don't take higher doses than the manufacturer recommends.
Mm-hmm.
That's never a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I tend to have very good results with medication in my practice.
Mm-hmm.
But I rely on a lot of things that are not even being taught anymore. The standard of care right now is keeping patients out of the hospital.
Yeah.
And that standard of care is a financial standard. It's yeah. not a scientific standard. It's just something we have to remember.
Yeah, for sure. I don't know. This is kind of, it just came to me and I'm curious and maybe some other people are wondering. So we're in the U.S. and so this is internet radio. So this is broadcast all over. And I'm just wondering, you know, I look at other countries and I just wonder where we are in terms of mental health in general and in terms of, you know, just dealing with things as families. I don't know. It seems like we're, you know, like post 9/11, it seems like we are still kind of in a shocked stage, a shocked state. And I saw an interview with Jack Canfield on Oprah, and he said, you know, he said, I want to be aware of what's going on in the world. And I'm paraphrasing, Jack, if you're listening, sorry. He said, but, you know, if you watch the news, there's a fire somewhere, there was a murder somewhere. You know, these are all things that are done every day. And so I'm just wondering, where do you think we are in terms of like mentally handling all the challenges of the world in this country?
I think that we in this country are, there's a lot of pressure in this country to be happy.
Mm.
And I think that that's one of the reasons that people are such high consumers of antidepressants, for one.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of pressure for non-psychiatrists to prescribe antidepressants. People want to have a quick fix and not examine what's making them unhappy and try to take a pill to feel better. There's also still a huge stigma in this country about mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
There doesn't seem to be as much of a stigma about taking an antidepressant that's prescribed by your family doctor. That seems to still be kind of okay.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea that you have a problem that perhaps you contributed to and that you need to work on is a huge stigma, as is the idea that you might have a real biological problem like schizophrenia.
Mm-hmm.
I've worked with psychotherapists, mostly social workers, who will tell their patients on the first day of therapy, the goal of this therapy is to get you off your medication.
Hmm.
You can imagine how difficult it is for me to work, to co-treat a patient when the therapist is saying, my goal is for you not to see Dr. Schneidman anymore.
Wow.
You know, how do I get that person to comply?
Yeah.
Especially when I think they really need the medication. If it's a severe disorder, if it's OCD, if it's a real bipolar, if it's a girl who's cutting herself and the only way I can get her to stop cutting is with a medication,
mm-hmm.
I don't want the goal of therapy to be off the medication. I want the goal of therapy for her not to cut herself.
Agreed, yes. Yes.
So there's this at the same time as people are willing to take a pill, a happy pill, there's this concomitant goal that there's this stigma of having a mental illness and we should hide it and lie about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've had patients who won't tell their other doctors that they're seeing me, mm-hmm. even when I know and I explain to them that their other medical problem might be the reason for their psychiatric symptoms.
Wow. Wow. That's huge.
And that happens a lot. they're ashamed to tell their endocrinologist or whoever. It's often the endocrinologist, the doctor for their thyroid disease, mm-hmm. or there's certain disorders that frequently present with psychiatric symptoms, mm. and they just don't want to say. They're embarrassed.
Wow.
So there's this secrecy about having a psychiatric problem. There's also the flip side. A lot of people will say, oh, I take Prozac or I take Zoloft. Like, I've walked into places and people will just present themselves to me as, oh, I take this medication, as if it somehow bonds them to me, which I find very funny.
Hmm.
And I try to be supportive and empathetic, but of course they're not my patients.
Right.
I think it's important to acknowledge that even though we don't know that much about the brain, we do know a lot about the brain. And we do know that with no brain, you have nothing.
Mm-hmm.
That is an absolute fact. You can live without an arm or a leg or a pancreas or a kidney, even a heart. You can put an artificial heart in somebody.
Mm-hmm.
You can be blind. You can have no eyes. You can have no ears. You can have no tongue. And you can live.
Mm-hmm.
No brain, goodbye. Mm-hmm. You're dead.
Mm-hmm.
And yet people say, oh, I don't want a medication that affects my brain.
It's not funny, but I have to laugh.
Well, I'm glad you laugh because it shows how absurd it is.
It is absurd. That's why I'm laughing. Yeah. So what can we do about that stigma, Dr. Vivian? What can we do? Like, you know, because there are kids that are on medication. There are teens, lots of teens that have been in rehab multiple times, you know, that are local. You know, what can we do?
Well, I mean, this issue with the substance abuse and
that's a whole other show.
We're going to have to push that to the side because once I'm going to get started on that, I'm not going to stop.
Okay, we'll schedule.
but
we'll reschedule.
The stigma is something that's going to have to start at the grassroots level. I don't really know what we can do about it. There's supposed to be parity for mental health, and yet we see there is no parity. The health insurance industry, no parity. We're paid less. Psychiatrists don't treat their patients in real life the way they need to be treated because of this financial constraint.
Hmm.
And because of the financial constraints and keeping patients out of the hospital for financial reasons, the hospitals don't provide the kind of treatment that they should be providing.
Hmm.
And it's just a vicious cycle of people not getting the treatment that they need and people coming out of residency training with a fraction of the knowledge that they should be getting. A psychiatric residency is 4 years.
Wow, that's a long time.
4 years.
That's a long time.
But yet, people go to their family doctor. Family medicine residency is 3 years.
Okay.
And people have confidence that their doctor, who in 3 years was supposed to learn every field of medicine, has the ability to treat their psychiatric disorder as well as, if not better than, a psychiatrist with 4 years of training.
Mm-hmm.
And sadly, what they're finding is that it's true. Because in a psychiatry residency now, you're so busy keeping people out of the hospital, preventing them from killing themselves, that you don't have time to actually learn psychiatry.
Hmm.
Whereas when I was in training, we spent hours in psychotherapy supervision. You know, we had like electives, things like psychopathology and film. You know, we'd go to these things, religion and psychiatry, and we'd go to all of these special electives, and we had hours of psychotherapy supervision, and we'd write process notes by hand, and, you know, you'd meet with your supervisor, and they'd say, oh, you didn't remember what he said? What does that mean about you and your mental blocks? None of that exists anymore. We would have training in group therapy. I remember in one rotation that I did as a resident, residency is when you basically live at the hospital, mm-hmm. and you learn how to be a psychiatrist.
Mm-hmm.
And we would have these meetings, these like, I forget what they were called, but the group, the community groups with the patients in the state hospital. And then we'd all bring in food because the processing of the meeting would take longer than the meeting.
Mm.
And it was like, it was really fun.
Yeah.
But we learned so much from that.
Yeah.
And they just don't do that anymore. Now it's just about the content of what the patient said.
Wow.
And it's quick. All of that that used to be part of normal residency training is gone.
Wow.
And so now when you send patients to a treatment, like a partial hospital program, the people that run the groups never learned anything about the group process.
Mm.
They might not even know that there's such a thing.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause they're not psychiatrists. They're mostly social workers. You can theoretically be a social worker therapist having never taken one course in psychology.
Wow.
And these are the people that are doing the therapy. These can be very smart people. Some of them are my good friends. They're very bright. They're very compassionate.
Mm-hmm.
But if you've never been taught, how can you do it?
Mm.
So it's just, it's a huge problem in the field.
It sure is. I never realized.
Yeah, most people haven't.
No. Well, because we're not, if you're not in the field, you don't know all the innards of the field. Well, this has been very enlightening. We're almost at the top of the hour.
Wow.
I know. Time flies, right? So we're just going to take a quick commercial break and then come back, and we'll have our closing segment here with Dr. Vivian Schneidman. And I'm so involved in the topic. My mind's like being blown right now. Like, what could we do? I'm a problem solver. My background is IT initially. So, you know, put a problem in front of me and I want to solve it. So my brain's racing. So we'll be right back.
Hey, this is Big C of Good Morning Hunterdon on HuntingChamberRadio.com. Like what you hear on Hunterdon Chamber Radio? Now you can take it with you. Download our Hunterdon Chamber Radio app from iTunes and Google Play Store now. Get schedules, station information, listen live, or to the latest podcasts. Everything in the palm of your hand or in your car during your commute. Get the HuntingChamberRadio.com app today.
Hi, this is Ruth Ann Disatel, Celebrant Officiant with Celebration of a Lifetime. When people ask me why I joined the Chamber, it's because I want to get to know you and what you're all about. And I want you to get to know me and what I'm all about. And together, I'd like to celebrate what we can do for Hunterdon County.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
Hi, this is Kim Pramatic, and we're back with Talented People here. I'm filling in for Jeannie Murphy, so if my voice sounds different, it is. And our special guest today is Dr. Vivian Schneidman, MD. She is a forensic psychiatrist, and we've been having a fascinating discussion here. She's actually here for the next hour, so stay tuned if you can. We're going to be talking about her book and her work in forensics, so it's going to be awesome, continue to be awesome. But I want to finish out with our final segment today and talk about, how do we know if our child needs treatment? When do we know? What are some signs?
Some of the signs that we would have to look at are, first of all, does our child seem different than he or she used to be? Is our normally happy, happy-go-lucky, cheerful, loving, affectionate child different?
Mm-hmm.
Is our child being secretive? Is he or she cutting? I mean, cutting is huge. This is a symptom that almost didn't exist when I was in training,
mm-hmm.
and now has become very, very widespread in the past 10 years.
Why do you think that is?
I think that one of the reasons is the kids learn it from each other.
Oh,
and
right.
It's not that they learn it from each other and they want to be like each other, but they've heard of it. They've heard of it and they try it. And cutting actually started off as a real symptom for certain kinds of personality, in certain kinds of personality disorders especially. And it really, unfortunately, it really does work to stop anxiety, and there's a biological reason for that. But kids hear about it from each other and they try it, and for some kids it works. And they use it for other reasons too. But it is a serious symptom.
Yeah.
And I don't want any kid to be cutting herself or himself.
No.
So that's important. And if you think your child is cutting, you shouldn't ignore it. You need to bring your child in to a psychiatrist.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing is if your child's behavior has really changed, if they're sleeping much more or much less,
mm-hmm.
if they are, if they stop being social, or if they're suddenly much more social than usual, and if you really don't like the kids they're hanging around with, fighting with your kid and saying, I don't like your choice of friends or I don't like your choice of behaviors, doesn't usually make things better. So if you think that you are not able to get through to your kid and you want to change their behavior and something's really bothering you, seek professional help. That's the best way to start changing things. And you want to find out what's really going on. You know, you can't, a lot of kids, if a child doesn't feel safe in their home, and safe doesn't mean that they're afraid you're going to beat them up or that you're going to abuse them. Safe just feels that, just can mean that your child feels that he or she is being judged and that you're not going to like what they have to say, so they're not going to tell you. And unfortunately, we spoke about this earlier, that a lot of parents have a lot of very high and unrealistic expectations about their children, and the children just don't feel safe not meeting those expectations. So when the situation gets to that point, you often can't, you can't resolve that yourself. So then it's time to seek professional help. It's better to go have an evaluation and be told everything is fine than to not have an evaluation and just keep going and wait for things to get really bad. You know, a lot of the referrals that I get are for kids that first made a suicide attempt. And as a parent, I don't want any parent to ever have to go through that.
Gosh, no. Well, these are some good things to look at. What would be the first step? Do you contact your medical doctor? Do you contact the school? What would be the first step for someone who wants to seek
to find to help? Find a psychiatrist? Well, it depends what you need. I'm a big believer in seeing a psychiatrist first.
Okay.
Of course, there are many psychiatrists who are just going to give you a prescription and send you on your merry way. Now, some psychiatrists work closely with other, with psychologists or other therapists that are good. And they, so it's really the luck of the draw. You can talk, if you feel comfortable, you can talk to your friends, you can talk to the school, you can say what you're looking for, you can ask your pediatrician. There's a number of ways. You can ask your insurance company. Most psychiatrists in this area don't take any insurance.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. The fact that they don't take insurance doesn't automatically mean that they that you're going to get good treatment, though. So you really need to find out who you're getting. You should go look at their websites. You can Google. You can check them on health grades, check their websites. There's a lot of ways to get information about people. And ultimately, you have to go with your gut. You know, I am not actually a child psychiatrist. I did a pediatrics internship, and I've always had, I always joke that I have an affinity for kids because I am so immature, but half my practice used to be under 21. Now I've been in practice for a long time. So now half my practice is under 30. But, I work with a lot of kids, and they send each other, and people send each other's kids.
I just
work well with them.
Yeah. That's great.
It's not because I specifically am looking for kids. They just come to me. So you just have to find the right person. And a lot of them have been to other, to child psychiatrists, and they, like, I would never go back to her. I don't ask that. I don't look for them. They find me.
Well, that's great. That's wonderful, because there are so many things, you know, there, life was so, seems, and at least looking back, seems simpler, like even 25 years ago. I don't know if it actually was or if it just seems that way because now we have more information at our fingertips, but seems like, you know, cutting is something new. That it seems like a lot of eating disorders are, it's just more prevalent.
There's so much pressure.
Yeah, it's the
pressure. You look at everything, you go on, you go on the internet. You know, YouTube has only been here for 11 years. All of these things that we're exposed to, Facebook is not that old. All of these things that we take for granted have not been around for that long. And yet they are a part of our daily life. Smartphones haven't been around that long. Cell phones haven't been around that long. Like, really think about it. Like, I can remember talking on the normal phone.
That had a cord on it.
That had a cord on it.
Like this one here in the studio, or a nice old phone.
You know, all of these things. And somehow we survived to adulthood without all of these things. And I think about what my life would have been like if we had had this. You know, all of these, all of the pressures on kids right now, this, these girls, this thing about the girls waking up at 5 o'clock in the morning to straighten their hair. Like, what would my life have been like if I had had to do that?
Or if you chose to do that?
Well, I think that a lot of girls don't know that that's a choice.
Mm-hmm.
It was something that they had to do.
Mm-hmm.
Now I see for my patients that they don't have to do it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the first time I tried to use a flat iron, I picked it up by the wrong end and I burned myself. I'm like, wow, what if I had to do this every day of my high school? That would have been a disaster.
My daughter plugged in my electric curlers for me and they're old. Mm-hmm. And she plugged them in and she said, how do you know if they're on? Because there was no LCD or LED display. It was hysterical. It's like, they get hot. Those are hot rollers.
Yeah. You know, and we forget. It's very easy to forget what it was like back in the day. Because you pick up new tech, at least I pick up new technology really easily. Like, mm-hmm. you know, I will admit this on the radio, I downloaded Pokemon Go. Like, you know, I like technology.